Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Bob, Dave, and more. If you guys have questions that you desperately need answers to, you need the professor, you just text those questions in to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, and we'll try to get to as many of those as possible. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're good. We were just, you know, we were having a good conversation. Jim's in studio, by the way, today.
Is he really?
He's sitting right here in living color right in front of me.
How do you like it, Jim?
Hi, John. Let me turn on my button. I like it. It's good to be back. Yeah, it's good to have face-to-face conversation here. And yeah.
Makes life easier for us, John.
Absolutely. Good job.
Doesn't it? Hey, we saw that the Patriots have another positive COVID test. So according to everybody we've heard from, the game is still scheduled. Everything's no schedule change has been put in place at this point. You expect it to remain that way?
I think so, but you can't guarantee it because, you know, another test or so tomorrow could cancel. But I know that they've informed the Denver Broncos as of now to, because they're flying out in the afternoon, to fly into New England, fly into Foxborough. And so it looks like it's still on. But one thing, I mean, we didn't expect that second test this week, but it's still kind of up in the air. But I think it's going to go.
Hey, John, I'm looking at this story, ESPN.com. Former Dallas Cowboys defensive end David Irving has been conditionally reinstated by the NFL, which leads me to the next question, John. If that's the case with David Irving, what's the holdup with Josh Gordon?
Good question. I mean, because, you know, you figure you got that, and it's like, why wouldn't you not get the next one to be able to get done? It's like, I'm baffled by that, because here's David. I mean, Randy Gregory's already practicing. Here's David Irvin, pretty much in the same boat as Josh Gordon. And so once again, the mystery of Josh Gordon continues.
It's so weird.
It is.
Because the fact that the Seahawks made the move to sign him, or re-sign him, led everybody to believe, all right, they've got an inkling. They've got an idea that he's going to be available soon. And at this point, you're looking at it'll be at least a six-game suspension for this season. He'll miss those six games. I don't know. I mean, I know you've sort of intimated that maybe he tested dirty for something else.
But I wouldn't know that, because again, it's like it's in such great secrecy.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Don't you think that would have leaked out somewhere if that were in fact the case?
Not really. I mean, because if the league doesn't leak it out, it's not like the team can really find out unless the agent and Josh Gordon tell him something like that. You know, that's one that's still kind of mystifying. So no, we don't know.
John, Jimmy Garoppolo is set to start against the Los Angeles Rams Sunday Night Football. He says his ankle feels good. What do you think? Think he'll throw for like 250 that night, or what?
I'm skeptical, and the reason I'm skeptical is that you know, he's going against a Ram team that has Aaron Donald. And in the last 2 weeks, the interior of the 49er offensive line and right tackle Mike McGlinchey have been terrible. So now you have a quarterback who's less mobile because he's got the high ankle sprain. You know, can he avoid getting hit? And is he going to have enough authority throwing the football? I think it's a very dangerous game. Again, I think it's safer for him to try to play, but I think his effectiveness is going to be a little more limited. And that's because of Aaron Donald and the pressure they can put on.
Hey, you had Bill Barnwell on today, right?
Yeah.
You're talking trade. The trade deadline, for people who don't know, is November 3rd. And we'll talk about that coming up later on around 5 o'clock. But who are some names out there you think, if the Seahawks were going to make a move, they'd have some interest in?
Well, I thought maybe they would have been interested in Camelia Correa, who was traded to Jacksonville. It was Correa and a sixth-round pick for a seventh-round pick coming back. Barnwell had one that was really interesting. It was kind of like the blockbuster deal that the Seahawks would trade B.J. Finney. This would be a three-way deal. They would also trade Jacob Hollister to Baltimore, getting a seventh-round pick, and then they throw that seventh-round pick in with a sixth, and they pick up the big contract of Alex Mack, the center from the Atlanta Falcons, and Dak McKinley, the defensive end, who actually is not going to play this week because he's hurt. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Do you think they'll trade for a pass rusher, John?
I think if they can. I mean, again, it's going to be what's available and what the cost is going to be, because I don't think they want to overpay. And, of course, they still have to watch the cap, but you certainly know they got to be shopping.
Professor, do you listen to the Midday Show here, Tom, Jake, and Stacy? They've got Bold Take Friday.
Okay.
I'm gonna steal one from him.
Okay.
You ready?
We call it very brave takes here.
Oh, very brave takes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Trademark.
Okay, John, what do you think of this one? I think the Dallas Cowboys are going to have a better record with Andy Dalton than they had with Dak Prescott.
I would agree. Yeah.
Would you?
Well, here's the reason is that, and it has nothing to do with the team itself. It has to do with their opponents. I mean, they're playing three teams, or they're going to have five more remaining games with teams in the NFC East. And, you know, Andy Dalton and that offense, and again, the limitations of the offenses of those three teams give them the ability to win those games. So it wouldn't surprise me if he goes 6-0. Or, you know, 5-0 with the remaining games and get maybe to 6 or 7 wins and win the division. In fact, I was making the, what do we call it, bold statements? My bold.
Very brave takes.
Very brave. My very brave take was that, you know, as bad as it will be with a losing team in Dallas, they'll be the first team to clinch a division.
Mm.
Hey, wow.
John, we were talking about.
Is that a good one?
That's a really good one, Professor, especially if you're going to win 7 games.
Yeah.
Hey, we were talking about players who are going to be returning to the Seahawks, whether it's injury or somebody new like Snacks Harrison. We removed Jamal Adams because he's the obvious answer to the question. But who do you think has the biggest impact of returning players for the Seahawks?
Oh, it's, I think pretty clear it's Jamal Adams.
No, we got to remove him, though. He's the obvious. You got to work for this one.
Okay,
John.
Yeah, so I got to work for that one.
So you got Dunbar's back, sort of, but he's got to get healthier.
Yeah.
Obviously, you got Rasheem Green. You got Jordan Brooks. Who else do we have on that list?
Yeah, I'd say you would lean toward Jordan Brooks because he brings some speed then at the defensive end position. So I'd go with Jordan Brooks.
Professor, we have Green Bay at Tampa Bay. It should be a great game. Aaron Rodgers against Tom Brady. Devontae Adams and Kenny Clark are expected back for the Packers. I like what Jamal Williams had to say, John. You see that? He said, my quarterback knows what fourth down is.
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's not going to go over very well.
This should be a good one. Who comes out on top?
I think Green Bay, although, you know, it could be tough because, you know, again, Green Bay's healthy. Tampa Bay still has a bunch of injuries, but most of the guys should be able to play. So I would lean to think that it's going to be, Green Bay because, again, it's Aaron Rodgers. And at this stage, Aaron Rodgers is so hot. I mean, no interceptions, 13 touchdown passes, and he's been just fantastic in what he's been able to do.
Yeah, he's looked really good. And he talked during the offseason and coming into this season about, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but finding some new level of peace, so to speak, that he just had a change of heart. He seems to be a gentler, kinder Aaron Rodgers these days. It seems like there might be something to that, right?
Could be, yeah. I mean, whatever it is, it's working really, really well because he's been that good. But I just think that the situation for him just got so stale with Bill Belichick, and obviously so, because, again, you figured that he wanted to stay a Patriot for life. Robert Kraft wanted him to stay a Patriot for life. Bill Belichick didn't care. And so it's like you look at it and you say, interesting. But I think in the end, you know, we'll see how this goes. But I still looked at Tampa Bay being a wild card team, but I didn't expect that the Saints would get off to the slower start on offense and defense that they did. And so with that in mind, it's like, it's going to be interesting to see how that all tallies up.
I saw those guys on ESPN, John, Get Up. It's Mike Greenberg's show.
Yeah.
Earlier this week, and they were talking about it was interesting because we know about load management in the NBA where some of the stars sit for a while, some games they don't play. They were suggesting that Drew Brees, because he looks like he's losing a little of his arm strength, a little zip on the ball, John, that maybe they should bring in Jameis Winston for a few games and save Brees for the end of the season. What do you think of that?
I think they can't afford to do that now because, you know, they've lost two games and they were thinking probably they're going to get off to a 3-0 or 5-0 or start. And so now, I mean, you can't, and you're in the NFC, right? And again, there's haves and have nots, but there are also so many good quarterbacks in the NFC. You can't risk falling behind because if you fall behind, you may not be able to catch up. So no, I think that'd be a little bit dangerous.
You're saying they suggested bringing in Jameis Winston?
Yes, Bob.
All credibility of that show is out the window.
Yeah.
Out of their mind. They bring in Taysom Hill before him.
Well, they're looking for things to talk about, too.
I guess. Goodness gracious, John.
Pretty crazy.
Jameis Winston. Yeah. What are we talking about? Hey, Greg Williams, you know, far be it from him to take any responsibility, but he was asked about the Jets allowing 161 points through 5 games, which is second most in the NFL. And he was asked about it, and he said, it's not a very good number, and a lot of it's not all defensively. And then they asked him to clarify, and he just said, you'd have to figure it out. What's he talking about?
I'm taking a shot at Adam Gase. I mean, can you imagine? Would that be surprising?
No,
I mean,
but Greg Williams is sort of low rent, man. I'm not a fan.
Well, because, I mean, I'm sure that as he sat there this week, he got four job offers around the league.
Certainly, he's in demand, as he'll tell you.
Oh, that's what he always says.
So, but for him to say that, I mean, is that him implying, well, it's the offense's fault? It's not all us.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he'll never take any credit for anything that goes wrong. That's just his nature. So I'm not surprised in that regard.
This Adam Gase's last game?
No, I mean, let's put it this way, it should be, but because there is as much of a disaster as any team we've seen in the last couple of years. But, you know, the New York writers are basically saying that they think that they're going to keep him because, again, it's like, what's the best way now to tank the season? Keep Adam Gase as a coach. and so they you know, obviously get Trevor Lawrence. Yeah. I know, like Bill Barnwell, for example, was suggesting. I didn't buy into this for the 11 trades that he was thinking of, is that Sam Darnold would be traded to the Indianapolis Colts.
Hmm. Oh, that'd be interesting, John.
Yeah, because, you know, they have – let's put it this way. I can't see them fitting all those numbers in because, you know, you got Jacoby Brissett at $15 million a year. You've got Jacob Eason sitting back there as a draft choice, and then you've got Phillip Rivers at $25 million a year. That might be a little bit difficult.
Mm. Professor Gardner Minshew is at home this week facing – Matt Patricia and the Detroit Lions. How do you see that one playing out, John? I mean, Detroit's got the better team, but I hope they lose anyway.
Yeah, I think anything with Detroit right now is not good because, you know, they're not – I mean, here's a defensive coach, and they're not good on defense. And, you know, people are now starting to speculate that Matthew Stafford is probably going to be in his last year. So, you know, everything's kind of mounting up against them. So not real optimistic for Detroit and Matt Patricia.
Again, if you guys have questions for the professor, you can text those in to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll get to some of those in a moment. But I saw that A.J. Green was in the news. He was seen basically apparently on the sideline telling his coordinator, hey, if you're not going to use me, trade me. And then he said, well, I'm just, you know, he was asked about it in the media saying he's just frustrated. What sort of value does he have at this point? He's 32 years old, mm-hmm. and this is a guy who's had a really hard time staying healthy.
I mean, he'll have value because, again, you can see even going back to last year, I mean, he's still, despite his injuries, because he's still, I think, bothered by the hamstring injury, you know, Emmanuel Sanders, you know, got value and really helped out the San Francisco 49ers. So that's where I think that there's still a possibility that he can come in and maybe, you know, help out a team. I mean, I don't think, you look at him, and not that he's had a Hall of Fame career, but a lot of those guys from the 2011 draft like him have done real well. He, Julio Jones, and all that stuff. But, no, I think that, you know, stay tuned on that front. But I think it's one where, you know, and remember, the Bengals don't trade. That's not their nature.
All right. Well, you just touched on what I was going to ask you as a follow-up. What's the likelihood that they would try to move him before November 3rd?
Doubtful. I really doubt it because, again, that's not their nature. I mean, even when people were thinking they should make trades in the draft, they don't do it. I mean, you've got an old-school owner in Mike Brown, and that's what he doesn't like to do. I mean, he still has black and white TV, I'm sure.
Hey, Professor, I like this matchup, Atlanta at Minnesota. It's interesting to me. The Falcons playing their first game without Dan Quinn, Rasheem Morris being the interim coach, and then Minnesota looked good against the Seahawks. They're at home. You think the Falcons are going to get their first win, or do you think Minnesota is going to get back on track?
They could because now Frank Gore has already been scratched from the game because he's got the shoulder injury suffered last week against Seattle. And so that, you know, takes away a big weapon for them. And you know that, I mean, even as bad as it's been for the Falcons, you know, Matt Ryan can pick you apart, and they still have their cornerback problem. So, yeah, I think there's a chance that maybe Atlanta can win this game.
John, the 253 says, hey, John, I texted you last week about the Raiders, if they can make the playoffs. Now I'm asking, can they actually win the division, seeing how they beat the Chiefs?
No, I don't see that. I mean, they did beat the Chiefs, but there's still going to be a big gap at the end of the season. But I think what they did do is elevate themselves into the wild card round because, you know, that was a big win. And so it was a good for Derek Carr to be able to get the confidence from that game. But no, catching Kansas City, I just don't see it.
Someone on the internet, John, I forget who it was, talked about Ryan Tannehill. They looked back at his numbers and compared him to Patrick Mahomes and found that Tannehill over the last 10 or 15 games has been better than Patrick Mahomes. Are you buying it?
I'm not buying that, but I am buying the stat that in the 16 games that Ryan Tannehill has started, his numbers are just about the same as Patrick Mahomes. That's the one that's true. So if he's taking, you know, the 10 games or whatever, if you look at the 16 and the 16s that Mahomes played, I mean, they're kind of right in sync, which he's not better than Mahomes. We all know that. But he is a hot quarterback who's really doing a good job.
John, the 843, I'm not sure where that's at, but the 843 said, will the Panthers have a two-headed backfield once McCaffrey comes back?
No, it's going to be a one-headed backfield because, again, Christian McCaffrey is making, what, $16 million a year. He's one of the best backs in the league. He catches passes. He's the face of the franchise. When he comes back, people sit.
Boy, no respect for the Bears, John. They're playing the Panthers. The Panthers are one-point favorites. Are they like a flimsy 4-1 team, do you think?
Well, right now they're a plus +5 as far as their point differential, which makes them the equivalent of an 8-8 team. And, you know, you can see that Le'Veon Bell didn't give him any respect because that would have been the best fit for him to go there with a 4-1 team and help out Matt Nagy. But he didn't go to Chicago. But what's interesting, I know that, you know, you get to this stage and you get to week 5 and week 6 and all that stuff. And so the question becomes, who's the surprise teams in this league? And ironically, the two teams that meet on Sunday, Chicago and Carolina, would be two of the surprises. Because, you know, Carolina, and again, I'm not surprised that Matt Rhule looks like he's going to be a really good coach. That one doesn't surprise me at all. What surprises me, they've been able to play a little bit better on defense that kind of keeps them in there. But then, you know, things are hurting right now because they had to put a draft choice, Gross Matos, on the injured reserve list today. You know, Kawan Short, their Pro Bowl defensive tackle, he's out for the season. And so they're really strapped on defense. But can Chicago's offense take advantage of it? I don't know if they can.
John, we were talking about, again, back to the returning players for the Seahawks. One of them was Darrell Taylor, a guy we haven't seen, a rookie, obviously dealing with an injury. Do you expect – Jim doesn't think he'll play at all this year. I'm thinking he will, but I don't have expectations for a rookie who's missed that much time. What do you think happens with him?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't write him off because, again, you know, you have injuries that linger. And, of course, you know, with the pandemic and the fact that he fell behind a little bit because he probably didn't get the right total treatment on his own, that he's a little bit behind. But I wouldn't write him off yet. I mean, the team says he's making a little bit of progress. It's just that he's not going to be ready by week 7. He has a whole second half of the season to try to get there.
John, I don't get this one at all, and maybe you can talk some sense into me about this. Alex Smith is the new favorite in Las Vegas to win Comeback Player of the Year award. And I understand, John, that what he went through, it's great to see him back on the field, his family there, but he didn't play well against the Rams, and yet he's the sentimental choice. The odds makers are thinking he's going to win this award. Shouldn't you have to do – I mean, it's great that he's coming back and playing, and we're all happy for him. But shouldn't you have to do something more than what Alex Smith has done to this point, merely coming back?
Yeah, clearly, because he got sacked 6 times, and, you know, they got Brandon Scherff back today on the offensive line, so that could help out. But, no, you're right. I mean, you have to earn it, but certainly, he's going to move to the front of the line as far as consideration because, I mean, you come back from that many years of missing football and having 17 surgeries, it's an incredible comeback. I mean, here's a comeback that you didn't even think had any feasibility. So, I mean, you know, you put him as one of the main candidates, but remember, you don't have to make that judgment until week 17.
I think it was part of Barnwell's article where he had those proposed trades, and one of them was bringing a quarterback to the Steelers, and I can't remember which guy it was.
It was Dwayne Haskins.
Dwayne, okay. Is it... What do you think the future is for Roethlisberger? How many more years do you think he plays?
I keep on thinking 2 because that seems like – because I think that's kind of the mindset that seems to be there. He could go a little bit longer than that, but in my mind, it's going to be 2 more years after this. And so it's like, you can maybe have Haskins kind of being groomed to be the quarterback. And, you know, it depends on what the price is going to be. And certainly he's going to come at a big discount. He's going to be more talented than Mason Rudolph. And he's probably, you know, not going to draw the ire of Myles Garrett as much as Mason Rudolph will. So I kind of get the feeling that, they can kind of work it out that way. But that's the thing. It's like everybody it's kind of like in the off season here where everybody was trying to make these trades and get all this quarterback. Oh, yeah, Jameis Winston is going to come to Seattle. And it's like, no, they're happy with Geno Smith. And, you know, right now they're thinking of winning now, not worrying about the quarterback of the future. And, you know, Dwayne Haskins equal or come close to what Ben Roethlisberger have? And I'd say the answer is no.
It feels like he received some pretty damning criticism talking about Haskins, saying he didn't work hard, he didn't study well. I mean, those are the things. Not learning or having a hard time picking it up is one thing, but when it's about effort and just not putting in the work as a quarterback, that's pretty damning. Is that around the league? Like, does that damage his stock, so to speak, a team that may be interested in him?
No, I think looking at his stats and watching him play so far has damaged his stock. and some of this may not necessarily be on him. I still remember in 2011, after 2011, Colt McCoy, who was a one-year starter in Cleveland and was a backup in Washington for so many years, he kept on saying in 2013, 2014, that in 2011, which was the lockout year, and this is 1 year after he first got to start in Cleveland, it set him back so much not having an off-season program. It took him years to recover, and technically he's never really recovered. And now you're talking about Dwayne Haskins, who only had 1 year starting at Ohio State, no off-season program, whole new coaching change and all those different things. So that's kind of worked against him too. I thought the encouraging thing today, as much criticism he's taken, and he deserves it, is that he's been sick most of the week, no COVID or anything like that, but he came back and the players were all happy to see him. They really enjoyed seeing him. So he does have some respect on that team.
John, I'm thinking Jacob Hollister and Luke Wilson aren't going to make it to the end of the year with the Seahawks. Do you agree?
Who's that again? Jacob Hollister
and Luke Wilson. Hollister because of making $3.25 million and not being used that much. And Luke Wilson hasn't been used at all.
Yeah, but, again, is it better to keep the experience of Luke Wilson and also have the pass catching? And again, if it's a trade.
No, I love them both. Yeah, if I'm them,
but we have to see where Cody Parkinson is, too, because he's on the NFI list because he's got the Jones fracture. And so they can certainly elevate him. But, they like Luke in the room. And I don't know. It's almost like having Parkinson on scholarship right now because you figure Luke's not going to be back next year. Hollister's not going to be back next year. Olsen's not going to be back next year. And, you have, Disley and you have Parkinson. And so they're going to be the two tight ends for next year.
John, what do you make of what you've seen from Lamar Jackson so far this year? I mean, his numbers certainly aren't bad at all, but it's not. And I think we all expected a regression. Defenses tend to figure things out the next year, and it seems like maybe they've figured out a way to contain him, not stop him, but contain him compared to last year.
Yeah, maybe it's the same, a little similar in a different way, but something similar to what we saw teams figuring out, particularly, ironically, it was Matt Patricia that figured it out, figured out what was going on with the Rams offense. And so in that early game, first week of December, they went with that six-man front, and that six-man front really gave them problems all the way through the Super Bowl. And so then last year, they really didn't rectify anything, and Todd Gurley's knee started bothering him. Now, I think in last week's game, I think it was pretty clear, even though they don't admit it, that the knee injury that kept him out of practice for a couple of days did hold him back because he had the fewest number of carries he's had. But they've kind of gotten a little bit away from rushing the ball as much as they did. Didn't seem to matter, though. They're still 4-1. But, they're not in sync right now, but there's time to get in sync.
John, you doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, taking phone calls from 8 to 9.
From 8 to 9, phone calls with John Clayton. John, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Okay, sounds good.
If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. DK Metcalf is having a breakout season so far, but where does that leave Tyler Lockett? Talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Skelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder that you've got radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and it becomes a radio right there for you. Coming up in less than an hour, Jim, we're going to do mean text. We haven't done that in a while.
I look forward to that segment. It's fun. I like what we learned, too. Are we doing what we learned today?
I believe we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll have mean text and then what we learned.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So we'll learn a lot about how people feel about us.
Okay.
So there'll be a lot of learning going on there.
Yeah.
But, we as long as they're creative, that's the only thing. Anybody that texts in goes, hey, you guys stink. That's no good.
Yeah.
Come on. Well, put more into it.
It's daily. Like, you know, Moore's an idiot. Moore's a moron. What's he doing there?
You're not alone. We all get it. Nobody comes out of this unscathed by any stretch of the imagination.
I know. And then there was another guy's like, oh, God, Jim, you look old. And I'm like, well, I'm 63, okay? I got white hair. What do you want from me? I'm trying.
You look the same to me.
I was out hiking on Tiger Mountain with the dogs today.
He was doing push-ups during the break.
Yeah, I'm trying to fight back.
Yeah.
360, I'm trying to fight back.
Fight off the age, Jim. Yeah. Fight it off. It's probably just because they haven't seen you in six. How long has it been since you've been to studio?
Well, yeah, I've aged 6 months since the last time I was here.
Was it March the last time you were here?
Yeah, probably early March, something like that. And, yeah, I'm here because Dave's on vacation.
Yeah, because we can't have three of us.
Can't have three.
Yeah.
And then I don't know when that's going to change.
I don't know either. Be nice if we could get Maura in the building. That would be helpful, too.
Another couple months.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll some kid named Anders here. I don't know anything about him.
Well, get him out of there. Get Maura in here.
It's good to see Harden, though.
Yeah. Harden, he's a shadow of his former self, isn't he?
Yeah, he looks great.
Yeah.
Go Cougs, Harden.
There you go. Meanwhile, a lot of conversation about DK Metcalf and where he is in this offense versus where Tyler Lockett is. Is he the number one receiver right now? If you look at the numbers, I mean, they're neck and neck. You look at the targets, 39 for Metcalf, 38 for Lockett. Decidedly better completion percentage to Lockett. 38 targets, 30 catches, 39 targets, 22 catches for Metcalf. Metcalf has him in yards, 496 to 342. He's got him in touchdowns, 5-4. And average is 22.5 yards per catch to 11.4 yards per catch. But they're different. They're different. I don't think they should be equal in that, specifically that category, because Lockett is your Doug Baldwin. Lockett is your security blanket. He's the guy that when it's 3rd and 6 and you got to get that first down, he's that sure-handed guy.
But he can also make the big plays, too, because we've seen that over and over again downfield, especially when Russell's improvising. He seems to have a good connection there with Lockett.
Yeah, Lockett always seems to be open. We've talked about it a million times that by the time he receives the ball, you're going, there's not a defender within 3 yards of this guy. What happened? You know, and he's so adept at doing that. And if he drops a ball like he did the other day, it's a gasp. Like, whoa, that was weird. We never see that, right? I mean, he's got the surest hands on the team. DK is still working on that part of it. But DK is a physical mismatch for cornerbacks out there, whereas Lockett isn't. Physically, DK can out-physical them, his speed, his size. He can, you know, post them up if he needs to. He's just got to be, I guess, work on being more consistent, hanging on to the ball. But I think he eventually is your number one receiver. But I would say if the game is on the line, even though we saw them go to DK with the game on the line in this last one, but I'd say 9 times out of 10 at this point, Lockett would probably still be your preferred target if you need that one catch. Like, we got to get this first down.
Now, why would you say that after the Minnesota game, though?
Because it's only game where it was DK.
It was Metcalf,
it's almost
but it was,
always Lockett.
It was 2 fourth downs, though.
Yeah.
And when you look at what's happened in the last couple of games, and again, small sample size, and really it doesn't matter. It's kind of funny because I was thinking, all right, so it doesn't matter if you're the number one receiver or number two or 1A and 1B. I mean, what's great is in tandem. They're one of the best, if not the best tandem in the NFL right now. And so you love having that. And for a while there, we were talking about the third receiver, and it doesn't matter as much as what the first two guys are doing. But you look at Lockett's averages, he's dropped from his first three games, 9.7 targets, 8 receptions, 86 yards on the average in the first three games, and he had 4 touchdowns. The last two games, 4.5 targets, 3 receptions, 41.5 yards, so less than half of what he was doing, and then no touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And so I made the leap to 710sports.com. I wrote a post today about it looks to me like DK Metcalf is the number one receiver overtaking Tyler Lockett. It doesn't really matter. It's kind of like we talk about pitchers in a rotation, and if you compare them in a rotation, it's kind of like he's like Marco Gonzalez, Tyler Lockett, and then all of a sudden you look at DK Metcalf and what he's doing. I mean, he's Aroldis Chapman throwing. I know Chapman's a reliever, but he's throwing 100 miles an hour. I mean, he's the guy with all the stuff.
Yeah,
you know, the unhittable stuff, and Marco can be unhittable too. So you like having.
He does it with more flash.
You like having complimentary guys like
that. Yeah, Marco's just steady, reliable.
Yeah,
you count on him, whereas Chapman's got the flash, 100 miles an hour, 102, 103, you know. So, yeah, there's that sort of spectacle nature to the way they play, and that's DK because of his size and his speed and, you know, busting down the field. And again, his average 22.5 yards per catch. So he's that deep threat. So yeah, there's more of a spectacle nature to the way he catches the ball versus Tyler. Michael Bumpus was talking about this and giving his thought on why Lockett is not seeing as many targets.
No, I don't think anything's going on. I think you're right. It's the flow of the game. It's the opportunities. You look at the footballs that DK Metcalf has caught. Now, I think about those sideline throws. I think about the slants. Those are the type of plays that DK needs to make for this offense to go. Now, Tyler Lockett is more that deep cross guy, that scramble guy. So he's still showing up when those moments present themselves. But I also think that because Tyler Lockett is the guy that gets this thing going, it's easier to double team and bracket a slot receiver, right? You put a linebacker over him, you put a safety over the top, you can take care of him.
And then one more from Pete, and then we'll comment on this. Just talking about on DK, says Jerry Rice had some drops early on as well, but Montana trusted him.
There was a time when Jerry Rice struggled, you know, and Bill Walsh believed in him and kept him going. He dropped a bunch of balls in his rookie season. About halfway through it, you know, he started to come out of it, and then he just exploded in world-class all-time ever, you know, type of play. DK didn't have to go through that, but he's had his plays, you know. In the first year, guys got the ball away from him a little bit, and he, you know, missed a couple balls maybe in the Philadelphia game that he had a chance in, the first time we played those guys. He's had some disappointments, and he's going to continue to have to deal with those, but he'll deal with them less and less and less. And he is developing into really a real factor.
It's a great comparison. Talking about the greatest ever to play that position, and Jerry Rice having issues as a young player. DK had a few issues last year hanging onto the ball. A couple of moments this year so far, but for the most part, he's taken a massive step forward, shown better hands. Needs more concentration at the goal line, hang onto that ball rather than get it punched out. But those are moments where I think down the road they're going to have a benefit. As painful and frustrating as it was at the time, like, man, what are you doing? Hang onto the ball, cross that goal line. That moment may ultimately have more value through the rest of his career, as he knows, like, that's going to be in his head. I'm not letting that happen again.
No, that won't happen again. And then the ball security thing with DK Metcalf, I never look at that and go, man, that's something. Well, he knows he needs to work on it. He talked about it in the offseason. And so he's going to get better and better. And boy, these comparisons and the national recognition that he's getting, and well-deserved. Even his own teammate, Jamal Adams, tweeting out that he's a current era Megatron,
yeah,
talking about Calvin Johnson there with the Lions. And so, boy, you just look at how young he is and the future he has. The other thing, I like what Michael Bumpus had to say, too. I mean, those guys are only going to get better together, too, because if you're going to go ahead and double and put all your focus on Metcalf, then Lockett's going to have a big game.
Yeah, remember we had David Moore on, I think, and he was talking about how there's no ego in the room where nobody's feeling like, well, where are my targets? Where are my targets? That everybody, and hopefully it stays that way. You've got that sort of cohesiveness and just team mentality in that room where typically wide receivers are the divas. Mm-hmm. That's pretty special if that's what's going on in that room.
So if you really keep winning.
Yeah, it's a talking point for us. But if in that room they're like, 5-0, who cares?
Right.
Like if I get 8 targets or 2 targets, whatever, that's pretty special. All right, coming up, Jamal Williams thinks his quarterback is smarter than Tom Brady. Carlos Correa calls his shot. And Russell talks being clutch. We're going to hear about all that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Let's set the record straight. Whose quarterback is better, yours or Ronald Jones?
Come on, man. I'm pretty sure my quarterback knows what fourth down is. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Aaron Rodgers would never do that. Never. You know what I mean? Like, he's too smart for that. We never be in that type of situation.
Shots fired. Running back Jamal Williams says on the Jamal Williams show, coincidentally enough, that his quarterback knows what a fourth down is and would never make the mistake that Tom Brady did, forgetting what down it was.
Yeah, that was a good one-liner, though, wasn't it?
It was a good shot, yeah.
Yeah.
It was solid. I can appreciate it.
Did Brady ever admit that he blew that?
No, I think he said he knew what down it was. Didn't he?
It didn't seem like there was a reporter there that actually tried to pin him down on that one, but he definitely held up four fingers when we were watching the game and looked confused as to why he was not getting another down. And then the way he threw the ball on third down, you don't think he would have forced it that far downfield if he had known it was fourth down, especially when he had a running back open across the middle that could have gotten you the first down.
Yeah, the whole sequence of events didn't support the idea that he knew what down it was.
Right.
You're going, okay, based on that throw, the play they ran, and his, more importantly, his reaction after it, he didn't know what down was.
I don't know what to make of that game. You? I mean, I know that we're rooting for Brady and the Buccaneers because they're 3-2 and you want the Packers to lose.
Yeah.
And then Aaron Rodgers, though, he's won a big game on the road already down at New Orleans. I think he's going to do it again. I think he's going to do it again.
You think Packers win?
I do.
Well, the Bucs are dealing with some injuries at the receiver position, right?
Yeah, they were. I'm not sure if that's cleared up this week or not.
We'll see. I'm pulling for Brady, pulling for the Bucs. You want the Seahawks to emerge as the king of the NFC, and right now the Packers and the Rams look like the two biggest threats to that title.
Yeah, it's the only 125 game on the schedule this weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the 105 game of Jets at Miami. I'll tell you, I was late to the party on this whole red zone thing. I thought, I don't really need red
zone.
It's
great, isn't it?
Oh, man. So much fun. Well, especially those 10 o'clock games. It's just rapid fire all over the place.
And the idea of sitting through one game, unless it's the Seahawks, just doesn't really make a lot of sense. Or a Sunday night game, you know, one that's on its own, okay, or the Seahawks. But when you've got all those games going on at the same time,
yeah.
The idea of just sitting there through one makes no sense.
Yeah, and then I know that COVID is a terrible thing, but as a fan, it was fun having Tuesday night football.
Yeah.
And then this Monday, we're going to have a 2 o'clock game. Kansas City at Buffalo, and they're kicking off at 2 o'clock, and then Arizona at Dallas after that.
And we'll be able to watch it on the TV here. Well, I guess not.
One strike. In the air, center field, Correa's watching. This is back, and it's gone! It's a walk-off home run! Carlos Correa! Astros win! Fastball up in the zone. Like I said, swung that same swing 1-0. Stayed on that fastball, had a game plan, and he knew it right away.
He did. Stood there. Majestic cloud to center field, watched it, and flipped it.
Stood there, watched it, stood there, watched it. And they're losing right now 1-0, right? Still 1-0, Harden?
Still 1-0.
Okay, good. Apparently he called that shot before he did it.
Yeah, I've wondered about that because you hear that and you go, that's cool that he called it. But then how many times do you think guys have called the shot and then
not come up with it?
And not come
sort
up
of
with
like your tie game or overtime game of the Super Bowl. You just keep calling for it and eventually it happens.
Yeah, something like that, Bob. are you amusing yourself over there?
A little bit.
I should have stayed home.
Yeah, no, it's good to have you.
Yeah, I should have stayed
Dusty
home.
Dusty Baker said, I mean, Carlos told me before he went up there, he goes, walk off. And I said, go ahead on, man.
Yeah.
Yo, really? You want to go ahead and do that? Okay, that'd be great if you could do that. And he did. So good for him, and I hope they go down in a big fiery mess today.
They got two guys on right now, first and second. Nobody out. Top
Who does?
Of the sixth. The Astros
Rays?
Do. Yeah, the Astros. The Rays are up 1-0.
I think the Rays
are. Now second and third, one out.
Who's
the
up?
The Astros are up, right?
They're batting, yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay.
All right.
Mike Zunino's playing today.
Yeah. Maybe he could. How great would it be if he hit the game-winning home run?
That'd be
or
perfect.
Just came up with a game-winning hit. Home run, whatever, single, I don't care.
So you didn't like Correa the way he acted. If Zunino hits a game-winning home run, you don't care how he goes around the bases. You want him to just take his time.
I want him to do cartwheels. I want him to do barrel rolls in between first, second, second to third. I want him to roll all the way home. Run backwards. I don't care.
It's so funny how there's some ex-Mariners that I just can't stand and won't root for, Chris Taylor. But Mike Zunino, he can do no wrong in my book. And it wasn't like he was that great here. I mean, but I just love him.
Great defensive player and a nice guy. Super nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Taylor, I'm not sure why you hate him so much.
Because he was terrible here.
Yeah, but so have a lot of players been terrible here.
Yeah, but how many have been terrible and then gone on to be terrific?
Well, Smoke.
Was he
wasn't terrible. He was. He was
wasn't
like
terrible here.
He was like Zunino in that he was a great defensive first baseman.
Yes, he was
fantastic.
Yeah,
and I don't care what the seam heads are going to tell you about. His range wasn't enough. Stop it. Yeah. Talked to everybody in that played shortstop and third base and second base from those teams, and they were like, having that guy at first, the pitcher feels better, we feel better. Everybody loved having him at first.
How about Vogey? You got issues with him?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do, Jim. I think you know the answer to that.
And then all the studying. I mean, I've done hours and hours and hours of film work and preparation. I mean, in the midst of all that, I already feel like I've been here. I already know what they're going to do. They already know what we're going to do. And meaning that they're like, oh, shoot, they're going to probably win this game. And I want them to feel that every time I walk in the field. I think when you play guys like, you know, Tom, you know, just as I watch him on TV or whatever it may be, it's like you feel like he's going to win the game every time at the end of the game. When I watched Michael Jordan when I was a young kid, I mean, you knew who was getting the ball, and you knew what was going to happen. And he may pass it, whatever, but he's going to make the right decision. But the reality is that if he gets a chance, you believed he's going to make it every time.
Right.
Same thing I feel about Tiger Woods when he was at his height of his career. I mean, that clutch putt, you just knew he was going to make it. You just felt like he's going to make this.
That's Russell Wilson on the Bill Simmons podcast talking about coming up big in the clutch situations that he's been in. And he's right. I think we've come to expect, regardless of how unlikely it seems, improbable it seems, if there's time on the clock and Russell's got the ball, he's going to find a way.
Yeah, he always does. I have bad news for you. The Astros are ahead 2-1 now.
Oh, for the love of God.
They're ahead 2-1. You know what's funny is I remember Russell way back when, one of the earlier press conferences, probably during his second year, where he talked about wanting to be the greatest of all time. And I thought, well, that's nice.
That's nice. That's cute.
Yeah, that's really adorable. Cute. You're a good quarterback, Russell, but I don't think you're ever going to be the greatest of all time, and he might be. He might end up being that.
He could be. He could be the most clutch of all time. He's on his way to a Hall of Fame career. Where he ranks amongst the all-time greatest, we'll find out.
But I think he's done enough already.
To be a Hall of Famer?
Yeah. If he never played another snap, I'd be hard-pressed not to put that guy in the Hall of Fame. With all those fourth-quarter comebacks he's had and that clutch gene that he has.
Yeah, the Football Hall of Fame is weird because they don't have those milestone markers like 500 home runs or 300 wins or those things that say, yep, Hall of Famer. There aren't those numbers. You know, there are guys in there that don't have the massive, you know, Gale Sayers and people like that have had shortened careers and Terrell Davis that have made it in there that don't have the gaudy numbers that put them in the top five ever of anything. But so it's hard to tell what would qualify.
Yeah, you might be right. He probably needs another Super Bowl to make sure of it, you know, to win another one. And he hasn't really been considered top five until what, this year or last year maybe?
Last year he was, yeah.
But yeah, even though to us here in Seattle, he's been top five for longer than that.
All right. Coming up, we're going to open up the phone lines for you guys. We don't do it often, but we'll do it today. It's not a Blue Friday because the Seahawks aren't playing. So it's a regular Friday. We're going to talk to you. We got mean text coming up at 5:30. So you guys can text in all the mean things you want to say to us. 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. But coming up, we want to ask you, get your take. Should the Seahawks pull off a trade before the deadline like they did with Quandre Diggs last season? And if they do pull off a trade, what position would you want them to go after? So should they make a trade? And if they do, is it a cornerback, defensive end, safety, running back, whatever you think, give us a call. 421-3776, toll free 866-979-3776. We'll come back with your thoughts next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.